KSCO. Here now is your host for today's program, Ruth Copeland.
Hi, welcome to the show today. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland, and Sam in the KSCO studio. And what have you got to tell us, Sam?
Well, let's see. Today's happy hour with Charlie Friedman is going to be broadcast live remote from the AAA office in Capitola at 4400 Capitola Road in Capitola. They have an event going on called Travel Time for this remote broadcast. The event itself is from 5 till 7:30. Charlie's show, of course, is broadcasting from 4 till 7. During this remote travel time show, going to meet experts from the world of travel, find the best deal on a cruise around Cape Horn, a train ride across Canada, or a photo safari through Africa. So learn how your travel dollar can take you much further than you thought with the Travel Time remote broadcast on the happy hour with Charlie Friedman today from 5 to 7:30.
Wow, sounds interesting. Travels on the horizon.
Yes, indeed.
Well, welcome to It's Question of Balance. In case you're a new listener, a bit of background on me. I'm British, as you can probably tell, but I've lived in Santa Cruz for over 10 years, and I'm an American citizen too. I have a professional background in the arts, in music, writing, and performance, and also in psychotherapy and business. And if you're new to the show, in the first hour, we look at all kinds of topics from all kinds of angles, attempting to see if we have more in common than divides us, and focusing on debate rather than one-sided conversations. And we keep a balance between the left and the right brain, with the second hour featuring an in-depth interview with a guest from the arts. If you'd like to contact me, you can email ruth@ksco.com. I'd be interested in your thoughts on the show, issues that you might want me to cover, guests that you might want me to interview. And I'll also try to monitor that email during the show in case you want to give an opinion that way. So that's ruth@ksco.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and message me there. My Twitter name is @ruthcopland. You're listening on KSCO AM 1080, or maybe to the live stream at ksco.com, which enables us to have listeners around America and the world, which is a good thing because the show is coming to you again this week from Great Britain, where I currently am. And I am broadcasting from the BBC in Surrey. So I wanted to thank them very much for making the BBC's facilities available to me. In particular, thank you to John Reynolds and Peter Stewart for helping me to get everything set up here. And I'm broadcasting from Guildford, which is in the county of Surrey, about 30 miles southwest of London. And as I mentioned last week, Guildford was established as a small town by Saxon settlers shortly after Roman authority had been removed from Britain. So the city is at least 1,100 years old, which is quite a feat. The BBC building is located on the campus of the University of Surrey, which, interestingly, I thought this was a fun fact, was the site of the first ever Led Zeppelin gig in 1968. So welcome to our transatlantic show. Sam is holding down the fort and operating the board back in the studio in Santa Cruz. So I want to thank him very much for doing that. I really appreciate it. He's going to be letting me know if we have callers, checking levels, and basically keeping it all together. So hopefully everything will go smoothly. But this is live radio, so there's always that element of danger that something unusual could happen. But let's hope not. Hopefully it will all go smoothly. And in the second hour today, just after three, I'll be talking to my guest from the arts this week. I've got her in the studio with me here at the BBC. Her name's Jane Lammercraft, and she's a British actress and comedy writer. And having gained bachelor degrees in both English literature and law, and a master's degree in text and performance studies, Jane went on to win the Dame Judi Dench Scholarship to Mount View Theatre School in London, where she studied acting, appearing in a range of TV shows, film and theatre, including playing the Virgin Mary in the US production King of Kings. Jane found her true calling in comedy, both as a performer and writer. Represented by top London agent Giles Smart of United Agents, Jane writes comedy for both TV and radio. She's written for the BBC, ITV, Carlton, Channel 4, for hit shows Smack the Pony and Armstrong and Miller. And she's also done a lot of writing for BBC Radio 4, BBC Radio 2 and BBC Radio 7 for a variety of shows. So I'm looking forward to interviewing her just after three, after the news. So do stick around if you can to hear this week's arts interview with Jane Lammercraft, live from the BBC studios here in England, but broadcasting out to you from KSCO. So what have we got coming up this hour? The 8th of March is International Women's Day. So I thought we'd look at something topical to coincide with that. So this week's subject is, what does it mean to be a man or a woman? What traits do we associate with being masculine and feminine? And are these traits innate, or are they social constructs that have been imposed upon us? Is it about what our true nature is, or are we being told what it means to be a man or a woman? Do we need a balance of both masculine and feminine aspects, no matter what our gender? Or are men men and women women, and never the twain shall meet? Is it doing men and women a disservice to stereotype the traits associated with the male and female? Or does it help us to know where we stand with one another? Men and women are made to feel so different, but do we actually have more in common than divides us? If you have any thoughts on this or experiences to share, do call the studio on 831-479-1080. So, as I was saying, the 8th of March is International Women's Day, which celebrates the social, political, and economic achievements of women while focusing world attention on areas which still require further action. And the theme for this year is Inspiring Change, and encourages advocacy for women's advancement everywhere in every way. And it calls for challenging the status quo for women's equality and vigilance, inspiring positive change. And in case you're wondering how International Women's Day came about, it's maybe not something that everybody's familiar with. There's a lot of days out there, aren't there? Special days. But this one, I think, is an important one. A bit of history about International Women's Day. In 1908, women's oppression and inequality was spurring women to become more vocal and active in campaigning for change. 15,000 women marched through New York demanding shorter hours, better pay and voting rights. It's still unbelievable to me that women used to not have the right to vote. Just seems really very strange. But anyway, they were marching for voting rights. And the first National Women's Day was observed across the United States on the 28th of February, 1909. Then, in 1910, at the Second International Conference of Working Women in Copenhagen, Clara Zetkin tabled the idea of an International Women's Day, and she proposed that every year in every country there should be a celebration on the same day, a Women's Day, to press for their rights. And the conference of over 100 women from 17 countries greeted Zetkin's suggestion with unanimous approval, and thus International Women's Day was the result. And since then, it has grown to become a global day of recognition and celebration across developed and developing countries alike. Annually, on the 8th of March, thousands of events are held throughout the world to inspire women and celebrate achievements. A global web of rich and diverse local activity connects women from all around the world, ranging from political rallies, business conferences, government activities and networking events, through to local women's craft markets, theatre performances, fashion parades and more. And many global corporations have also started to more actively support International Women's Day by running their own internal events and through supporting external ones. For example, on the 8th of March, our very own local search engine and media giant Google some years even changes its logo on its global search pages, changing one of the O's in Google to the symbol for female. This being, you know, the circle with the cross underneath. And interestingly, the symbols for male and female come from astrological symbols, denoting the classical planets Mars and Venus. And they've been in use since the Renaissance, or the Renaissance, as we would say in America. And year on year, the International Women's Day is increasing in status. And the United States even designates the whole month of March as Women's History Month. So if you'd like to get involved in an event in your area, you can go to www.internationalwomensday.com. And local to Santa Cruz, the YWCA in Watsonville has an event on the 8th of March from 12 to 2 called Women Take Care of the World, When Will the World Take Care of Its Women? Which includes lunch, gift raffles and distinguished speakers in the field of women's health. So if you fancy going to that, YWCA in Watsonville on the 8th, 12 till 2, that's 340 East Beach Street. You can call 722-1798, 722-1798 to reserve your place. And we need to go to a commercial break now. Understand we've got a caller on the line, so I'd ask you please to hold on over the break. I'd love to hear what you have to say. So keep it here on KSCO 1080 AM. It's A Question of Balance with Ruth Copland.
Are you or one of your loved ones suffering from a health condition that is deteriorating your quality of life? Are you tired of getting no results doing what your doctor told you to do? Have you, like millions of other Americans, been taught to manage a disease instead of trying to reverse it? Stop. We can help you. You deserve to be healthy, and so do your loved ones. If you're ready to take back your health, then join the Santa Cruz Superhumans Longevity Team and Superhuman and Nutritional Pharmacist Ben Fuchs at Vintage Faith Church on Friday night, March 7th at 6:30 p.m. Ben Fuchs will speak on health, healing, and the human body. Book your free VIP tickets today for yourself and anyone you know who could benefit from this information. Seating is limited, so call to reserve seats for your group today at 831-331-9523. That's 831-331-9523. We hope to see you there.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Longevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call Andy or Phyllis Anderson at 888-245-0300. That's 888-245-0300.
Hi, I'm Pamela Fugit-Hetrick, host of the Mighty Move Show. As Buzz Lightyear would say in Toy Story, to infinity and beyond. That's where our federal spending limits are going. What is going on with your personal finances? We all need skills to control our personal finances, and that's why you should listen to my show, Money Moves, Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Money Moves is dedicated to provide tips and tools to help you manage your own money. This is a good time to take stock of your financial situation and find the information you need. Join me for Money Moves on Thursdays from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KSCO AM 1080. Thursday nights, 7 p.m. for Money Moves. Remember, that's Thursday nights, 7 p.m. for Money Moves.
Welcome back to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland on KSCO AM 1080. And our topic this week is, what does it mean to be a woman or a man? What traits do we associate with being masculine and feminine? Are these traits innate or are they social constructs imposed upon us? Do we need a balance of both masculine and feminine aspects no matter what our gender? And is it doing men and women a disservice to stereotype the traits associated with the male and female? Or does it help us to know where we stand with one another? Men and women are made to feel so different, but do we actually have more in common than divides us? Well, we have a caller on the line, Lowell in Soquel. Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland, Lowell.
Hello, Reese. Interesting subject. It certainly one deserves the attention you're giving it. However, it gets awfully serious in what you're coming down with it. Our traits are definitely different between man and woman. Our thought processes are different. There's a lot of things that will probably never be resolved, but I want you to keep this in mind. It is a constant war, a war between the sexes. But keep this in mind, the war between the sexes will never be won because of the constant problem in warfare of too much fraternization with the enemy.
That's interesting. I'm interested in why you think it's a war. Why would you characterize it as a war?
Well, it appears to be one. There is conflict. And I don't think it's a serious war, although in some countries, particularly in the Middle Eastern countries, my God, it is a war, at least it should be, because the women should stand up and take over, if you want to know the truth. The abuse they take in those countries is unbelievable.
Yes.
The war, it should be, how do I say, no more than a simple political war, if you will. There is no sense whatsoever in what goes on in those countries.
No. I mean, that's true that there's a lot to be done in certain areas of the world. That's very true. So do you, in America, for instance, do you still see it as a war of the sexes in America?
As I say, in a very minor sense, and I really think that it would make much more sense for the two sexes in this country to pay attention to what's going on in the other areas of the country and try to set an example and show those people that what they are doing is entirely wrong, and to perhaps even boycott most everything that goes on in our trade with them until they actually end up being somewhere in something that is akin to civilization.
Yeah. Well, this is a sort of problem area, isn't it? How we, you know, get on our high horse about civil rights and human rights, and yet we do still have dealings with countries that have appalling records of human rights. It sort of seems that we pick and choose a little bit what serves us, and we might sort of say, oh, yes, we don't really like what you're doing over there, but we will benefit from what you can offer us here.
Yeah, I truly believe that much of the business between, particularly as women are fighting for their rights here, they're not paying any attention to what's going on over there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's probably true, but I guess also, you know, how much agency do they have to really help what's going on in a different country other than through petitions on the internet and things like that?
Particularly when it's more fun to have war here and pretend we really have one, which we really do not here.
So what, okay, just drill this down a little bit. What constitutes the war, however minor, as you see it, between men and women in America?
What constitutes the war?
Yeah.
I would say their gender. Your gender, my gender, and we do think in different ways. However, if we try to take care of and protect each other, we should be fine regardless of our different ways.
So these different ways, can you give me an example of some of that? Because I don't think I'm quite getting everything that you're sort of saying. I mean, is it like, you know, women are caring and men are more sort of hunting, shooting and fishing, you know, that sort of a thing? Or, I mean, what about women working
working? That's where we all went wrong in this country, if you'll allow a little tongue-in-cheek. When we got to this country and took it over from the Indians, the men did all the hunting and fishing and playing, and the women did all the caring. It was a hell of a situation. I'm going to leave you with that before
okay.
I more trouble.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, Lowell, and sharing your thoughts. Thank you very much. I hope you might call in again.
You bet.
Okay, bye-bye. So that was Lowell in SoCal giving some comments on our topic of this week about what does it mean to be a woman or a man. And I'm just wondering, he's perceiving some sort of war between the sexes. Are we still in a position of being at war with one another, even in a minor way, or have we got past that? I'm just interested what you might think about that. If you have any thoughts, do you give me a call on 831-479-1080. And I'm also interested in looking at what traits do we associate with being masculine and feminine? And are these traits that are natural to being a man or a woman, are they innate? Or are they social constructs that have been imposed upon us? Do we need a balance of masculine and feminine aspects, no matter what our gender? And also, I'm just wondering whether it's doing men and women a disservice to stereotype traits associated with the male and female, or is it just reality, and does it help us to know where we stand with one another? And, you know, we are made to feel very different, but do we have more in common than divides us? If you have any thoughts or experiences to share, do call me, 831-479-1080. And when I was researching this topic, I was looking on the Planned Parenthood website, has an interesting discussion on gender traits and roles and what it means to be a man or woman today. And it states, what does it mean to be a woman or a man? Whether we are women or men is not determined just by our sex organs. Our gender includes a complex mix of beliefs, behaviors, and characteristics. How do you act, talk, and behave like a woman or man? Are you feminine or masculine or both or neither? What is feminine? What is masculine? And, you know, feminine traits are usually thought of as ways of behaving that our culture associates with being a girl or a woman. And masculine traits are ways of behaving that our culture usually associates with being a boy or a man. And obviously, these traits change depending on where you are in the world. And it sort of gives a list of words commonly used to describe femininity and masculinity, which I thought was pretty interesting. And obviously this is kind of stereotyping the feminine and the masculine, so be interested to know what you think about these lists. So words commonly used to describe femininity are the following: dependent, emotional, passive, sensitive, quiet, graceful, innocent, weak, flirtatious, nurturing, self-critical, soft, sexually submissive, accepting. So, I'm wondering what you think about that. And words commonly used to describe masculinity: independent, non-emotional, aggressive, tough-skinned, competitive, clumsy, experienced, strong, active, self-confident, hard, sexually aggressive, rebellious. Now, obviously, society's categories for what is masculine and feminine, this article states, are unrealistic. They may not capture how we truly feel, how we behave, or how we define ourselves. And all men have some so-called feminine traits, and all women have some so-called masculine traits. And we may show these different traits at different times. Our cultures teach men and women to be the opposite of each other in many ways. But the truth is, we're more alike than we're different. At least that's what this article is proposing. So who do we have on the line, Sam?
We have Peter in Birmingham. Or is it Birmingham?
Probably Birmingham, yes.
Anyway, he has a comment. Peter.
Okay, welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland, Peter.
Hi, Ruth. Hi. Nice to speak to you.
And to you.
Yeah, I'm listening in sunny Birmingham, although it's not sunny because it's 10:30 here at the moment. I know it's afternoon. Well, you're in England, obviously, I heard you say earlier.
Yes.
It's afternoon in Santa Cruz, but... I was interested in your previous caller. It's a shame he thinks that we're at war. I'm not really sure. I couldn't quite understand why he thought that men and women were at war. I mean, maybe hundreds of years ago, who knows? But I don't see it really as a war, to be honest. I mean, you know, things have changed over the years, and I think we're more of a partnership. Really, we work together. You know, towards a common goal, really. You know, I'm a house husband myself, which is what prompted me to ring. Obviously, I'm interested in your topic tonight. I see sort of roles kind of reversing, I guess. You know, I'm happy to stay at home. I don't sort of feel that I'm not a man. You know, I'm happy to be at home. I'm happy to look after the house, to look after my child. Do all the housework, the cooking, you know, it suits me fine. And my wife has a good job. She's happy to do that. I take care of everything at home. She has nothing to worry about. So, we're working together. We're not at war. I mean, obviously, you know, he was talking about, you know, I guess, I don't know what countries he's talking about that he feels they're at war, but, I don't know what your views are on it, really. And also, I was interested in the list you were just reading of what, you know, of describing the sort of traits of men and women. I think, really, the lines are blurred nowadays. It's not how it used to be, so I'm not sure where that article came from. I didn't catch the beginning of what you were saying. So.
Well, those were... describing kind of stereotypes of traditionally what's associated with femininity and masculinity. So it wasn't saying this is what is masculine, this is what is feminine. So I think what it was trying to set out was that there are these kind of stereotypes of what a man must be, you know, that he's, you know, like boys don't cry and all that kind of thing. They have to be strong and aggressive and all the rest of it. But I'm interested in what you're saying because... there is, I think, possibly still some sort of stigma about taking on a more caring role as a man. Is that something you've come across at all?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, I would have said maybe 15 years ago, I guess I probably would not have considered that I'd be in this position, and I might have thought more like that. But I do think things have changed. You know, certainly, you know, in the last 10 years, you know, I mean, I don't know what it's like in America and how they feel about it. It'd be interested to hear people call in and see what their experiences are. But I've not come across, I mean, I have many friends and none of them have ever made me feel like, you know, I'm not a real man. I should be out there working. I should be the breadwinner. My wife has never, ever, obviously, you know, made me feel like that either. It suits us. Obviously, it won't suit everybody. But circumstances sort of dictate sometimes that that's the way it goes. You know, and there's more, I mean, I'm glad to, you know, to say, or in my opinion, you know, there's more equality in the workplace now. So women are able to sort of get further on equal pay because, I mean, years ago, obviously, you know, women had to really fight hard and in some cases they probably still do. But I think it's becoming easier for women to be promoted and, you know, you know, they're valued more than they used to be. And a lot of women are happy to do that as well, so...
Yeah, that is an interesting one, equal pay, because there is still, in America, some resistance to women getting equal pay, and it's really hard to understand what the basis for that is.
Well, as I say, I think it was like this here probably, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but certainly, you know, my wife works for a big company, and they don't, you know, they're happy to promote women, they're happy to pay them the same amount as men, quite rightly. And, you know, you were saying earlier, you can't believe women never had a vote. But, you know, equally, it's amazing to think that women were, you know, paid less than men for doing the same job, and in some cases doing it better.
Yes. Yeah, there doesn't seem a lot of logic to it, really, other than just sort of keeping the status quo that benefits a certain sector of society and wanting to maintain that advantage. Yeah. But part of this topic that interested me is you know, how much of what we associate with a man or a woman is kind of innate, you know, is within us, and how much is been imposed upon us by sort of like social constructs, you know, of what is expected of a man and of a woman. And obviously your situation is such that you are going, you know, against the more traditional stereotype, but it's not affecting your own view of yourself as a man.
Not at all. As I say, I'm happy to do it. You know, we all benefit from it as a family. So
yeah,
I really don't have an issue with it.
And I think, you know, the other thing is that one of the things I was bringing up is that I think it's doing a disservice to men and women to try and lock in these sort of traits too tightly.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously, directionally, there's things that men and women, you know, are different. But we also, there's a lot of interchangeable traits within us, to, you know, and everybody's different. But it sort of almost seems like we should think of those as kind of human traits rather than masculine or feminine traits.
That's a fair point, yeah. I would agree with that, definitely.
Yeah.
We're all on the same side, I hope.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. I'm glad to hear you say that you don't perceive a war anyway, at least in your
Not
life.
Not at all, but
yeah.
Someone might disagree with me, so... Hopefully
well,
they'll ring in
it. Again, it's just like a media sort of thing, isn't it, of, you know, this war of the sexes and you know,
right.
so much is imposed from the outside. And you know, I think we are more alike than we're different. I would say.
I mean, it may depend on, of course, where you live. You know, I live in Birmingham in England. It's the second city of England after London. It's very cosmopolitan. Maybe that has something to do with it. Who knows? I'd be interested to hear. Maybe if I was in a village in the middle of nowhere, you know, it would be different, I guess.
Yes. Well, maybe, yeah. And I think, you know, what is important as we develop our civilization is for men and women to both feel like they have the options to express themselves in the way that they want to. Because I think, you know, the converse of men sort of feeling perhaps that they can't be carers and can't be at home is women feeling like they have to work, you know, which I sort of feel like was a not necessarily a great thing that came out of feminism. You know, what women were asking for was to be valued equally for what they had to offer, whatever that might be. And caring for children and caring for a home is a very important task, whether it's done by a woman or a man. And I don't think women should be made to feel they have to go out to work in order to be a modern woman or you know, or to be equal. It's what works for you, as you said.
Exactly. And also, I've discovered since I've been a stay-at-home dad or house husband, whatever you want to say, is that it's probably easier to actually go out and work. Housework and looking after the house is actually quite difficult, and until you do it, you don't appreciate how much work is involved.
And planning the meals.
I often say to my wife, I think you've got a better deal. I think I should go out and get a job now. I thoroughly admire, you know, the previous generations, my mother, you know, for bringing up a family, and also my mother worked as well as bringing up a family. But because of the stereotyping in those days, of course, my father was the he was the main breadwinner, but my mother worked, but she still had to come home and look after the house and the children. But this is what's good, really, is that each generation, I think, recognizes that, you know, we are in it together, we should pull together and, work as a unit and, that there shouldn't be sort of, this is your job, this is your role. I don't think that's necessary in this day and age.
No, I think I would agree with that. Well, we're going to go to a commercial break now, but thank you so much for calling in,
Peter. And it's a good show, very interesting.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland on KSCO AM 1080.
Hey, buddy, it's me, your laptop. That's right, your little modern marvel of technology you've been abusing for months. Dude, we need to talk. Do you really think that those free PC Fix-It programs are any match for today's spyware and malware? Not to mention the NSA and some of those websites you've been visiting. Now, I'm not here to judge, I'm just saying. You need to take me to Peter and the friendly staff at User Friendly Computing to get me back into tip-top shape.
Tired of unfriendly computer support, slow computer, viruses, spyware? No problem. Call the friendly computer experts at User Friendly Computing. We take care of all your PC, Macintosh, and laptop needs. Mention KSCO and get a free $50 diagnostic. Visit us today at 505 River Street on the way to downtown Santa Cruz, across from Gateway Plaza. We give you a choice. Drop your computer by the shop, or we'll come to you. Call us today at 423-9653. User Friendly Computing.
If your family car runs out of gas or oil or water, its engine will fail. If your body runs out of essential mineral or vitamin or amino acid nutrients, it will grow weak and you will be left with aches, pains, and diseases. Some say you can get all 90 of the essential nutrients you need from foods you eat. Maybe, but if you eat foods from farmed out soils or foods that have had the life processed out of them, you will deprive your body of some essential nutrients. You can get all 90 of the essential nutrients your body needs for less than a daily latte with a 90 for Life Healthy Start Pack. It's easy, it's delicious, and they are essential.
Ace is the place to pick up Dr. Joel Wallach's 90 for Life Healthy Start Pack. Swing by Ace Hardware in Freedom, Gilroy, Marina, Salinas, and Watsonville and ask for the 90 for Life. You'll get all the nutrients your body needs to grow strong and stay healthy for less than a daily latte. Remember, Ace is your place for the 90 for Life.
I looked down at my hands and was like, wow, I'm performing CPR on this guy. And then I actually finally met him. That was probably one of the coolest parts of my life, being able to talk to a guy after I gave him CPR.
Reed was just 17 when he heard a cry for help. Thanks to his Red Cross training, he didn't freeze, he didn't panic, he knew exactly what to do. Red Cross training saves lives. Sign up for a class today at redcross.org.
It's finally here, a brand new talk show discussing everything surfing and skateboarding. Tuesday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on AM 1080 KSCO. Off the Lip is hosted by local surf writer Neil Perlberg and skateboard aficionado Terry Campion. Become involved by calling in to chat with their many guests. Get up-to-the-minute surf and skate news and win prizes in their weekly trivia contest. It's the Santa Cruz surf and skate scene on Off the Lip. Tuesday evenings from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on AM 1080. KSCO.
Welcome back to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland on KSCO AM 1080. And we've been talking this hour about our topic this week, which is, what does it mean to be a woman or a man? And what traits do we associate with being masculine and feminine? And is it doing men and women a disservice to stereotype those traits associated with being male or female? Or is it helpful to identify the different strengths that we have? Do you think men should be men and women should be women? And what does that mean to you? Or do you think that we all benefit from allowing ourselves to develop masculine and feminine traits? What do you think makes a man or a woman? Do call the studio with your comments. I'd love to hear your thoughts. 831-479-1080. And sexologist John Money, or Mooney, I'm not sure which it is, was the first person to introduce the terminological distinction between biological sex and gender as a role. And that was in 1955. And before his work, it was uncommon to use the word gender to refer to anything but grammatical categories. And Money's meaning of the word embraced the concept of a distinction between biological sex and the social construct of gender. In other words, the traits we associate with men or women are socially constructed. And that is that their definition and significance are negotiated by the culture around them. They're not facts that exist in an essentialist way. The way we view the masculine and feminine depends on historical, cultural, and interpersonal influences. And what we think of as male and female stereotypes have grown up over time and differ around the world. And, you know, as we were talking about earlier, men and women are made to feel so different from each other. You know, our cultures teach women and men to be the opposite of each other in many ways. But do we actually have more in common than divides us? And I was thinking, you know, books like Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus and others like them, media, advertising tends to pander to stereotypes, tradition. All these things make men and women feel their poles apart. And whilst obviously we do have different strengths and challenges, is it possible that we share more than we are led to believe? What do you think? I'd love to hear your views on this. Call the studio on 831-479-1080. And there does seem to be more of a desire for flexibility between masculine and feminine traits than there has been for a few thousand years. We seem to be appreciating the qualities of both and the fact that men and women can each have a variety of so-called feminine and masculine traits, and that can be healthy and useful. And, you know, caller that we had, Peter, was talking about he has had a traditional role reversal by being the carer of his child and a house husband as such, and that didn't make him feel any different as a man. So I'm wondering, you know, does it still serve us to identify ourselves, certainly in terms of our roles, as men or women? Or should we perhaps be thinking of us all as human beings? What do you think? That's kind of a bit of a out there concept, I guess, because obviously we are always going to be men and women, pretty much, at least biologically. But, well, what do you think? Do you think that we should be thinking more that we're just human beings, and that we can share a range of traits, and everybody's going to be different in the range of traits that they have? If you have any thoughts on this or experiences to share, give me a call, 831-479-1080. And thinking about this topic, I was also thinking about what pressures or limitations are associated with the traditional roles of male and female. And obviously, for women, traditional gender roles kept them for thousands of years in a position of subjugation to men, where what they were allowed to do was decided for them by men. And this is a situation, as our first caller Lowell was referring to, that persists in certain areas of the world to this day. But it's also been observed that men have suffered as well from their gender role assignation. And I was looking at a study by Eisler and Skidmore in 1987. They looked at masculinity and they created the idea of masculine stress. And they found three mechanisms of masculinity that accompany the traditional masculine gender role that often result in emotional stress. These are the emphasis on prevailing in situations requiring body and fitness. So, you know, men needing to feel or feeling like they need to be strong and fit and everything. Being perceived as emotional, that's a stress of the men, obviously feeling like they shouldn't be emotional. And the need to feel adequate in regard to sexual matters and financial status. So these were all three areas that this study found that men had a lot of stress around because of traditional roles, gender roles that had been imposed upon them. So who do we have on the line, Sam?
First up, we have Jim in Santa Cruz.
Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland, Jim.
How are you doing? First, I want to say I'm coming from I came from a family of six boys and one girl. Okay, my dad was very traditionally Air Force. My mom was Nurse Marine. And anyway, he was the dad. He would go to work and come home, and my mom would be there, you know. And he was very man. He was a man back then. And I don't hold it against him. As, you know, we weren't very close. We weren't a touchy-feely kind of a family. But he was there. I mean, it was constant. And let me tell you, that's missing around today, is constant, you know, just being there, you know what I mean? And I sometimes feel sorry for my mother because we had all these boys, and, you know, I mean, my dad would do the discipline when he needed to when she told him something like that. And she would be very motherly. She'd bake bread. She'd can fruit. She'd do everything, all that stuff, cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There was very little takeout, you know, in my family. So when I got older and got married, I ended up kind of thinking, not thinking that way, you know, kind of thinking, okay, that's not how I'm going to be. But anyway, I got divorced after a while, but I ended up with my child by myself, boy, right? And I'll tell you what could change men's whole attitude about everything is try to do that and try to do it real. I mean, to do it where you're there all the time. You're not babysitting, you're not throwing them over your mom, you're not throwing them here, you're not throwing them there. And you will see your whole attitude about life changes. I don't know if it's called. I made a joke about it. It brought out such a large feminine side in me. I'm a lesbian. And it was a life-changing thing to me. The way you look at the world, you don't even drive down the street the same if you have raised the baby from its diapers to he leaves the home, you know, to go get married. If the man really does get involved, and my dad was involved, but not all that, you know, all that much as far as emotionally. And I didn't, like I said, I don't hold it against it. I think I remember when I got married, when I shook his hand, I'm thinking to myself, boy, it's the first time I really touched him. I can't remember, you know, but that was back then and that's what it was. And I accept it and I don't hold it against him and I don't have to go to therapy about it or anything like that. You know, but men nowadays, well, one thing like my dad used to say, they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground until
right.
I was a kid. And then if you take it seriously, then you will change it. And it will change the world because I think it changes your whole attitude about everything.
Yes. Well, I commend you for bringing up a child and you know, it is a tough thing to do well.
You watch about everything and you watch how they're just, whoa, just so clean. And we dirty them up. You know what I mean? People that don't do right mess them up.
Yes, that is an unfortunate, part of child rearing, that risk. But it sounds like, you know, you're just demonstrating that men do have compassion and caring and that ability within them if they're not made to feel that they shouldn't be doing that.
Right. And you gotta have also, but then you gotta also have the man, your father, instill in you to be yourself.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jim, for calling in. We have two more callers who're trying to fit in before the top of the hour, but I really appreciate you sharing your experiences. It was a great, great thing that you've done. Thank you. And who have we got next on the line, Sam?
We have Billy Sunshine from Capitola on gender issues.
Hi, Billy. You're speaking to Ruth Copeland on It's a Question of Balance.
Hi, Ruth. Yes, I'm glad, so glad to hear that last guy who takes child rearing seriously. That's great. When you talk about, do we call them human beings or men or women? I think we continue to call them men and women. And, you know, just like we realize that lots of people are not of our village. But I think what we do is allow ourselves to open up what that's meant. As we've grown as a culture and, you know, we understand that there are those rigid things we were taught about gender roles do fall by the wayside. So I just think we just have to open up our compassion for both men and women and realize that everybody is part of something, even though we are still very different, we are also very the same.
Yes, I think that is a very, very good point. Thank you very much for calling in, Billy. And we have one final caller, Sam?
Yes, we have Elizabeth in Somerset, England.
Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland. We've got, you've got about a minute or so to give your view.
Well, very interesting subject, and it just takes me back to when I was growing up quite a very long time ago, because I'm a mature lady now, and I had two brothers, and they never, ever had to do any housework. They never had to do any chores in the house at all. It was always down to the girl, and I was the only girl. And it gave me a slant on life, really, as I got older, that, you know, how unfair it is to have a particular idea of what a girl and a boy should be fulfilling as they grow up, and not able to share some of the family chores that are there on a daily basis. But I flew to America recently, and I was quite surprised that the pilot was a woman. And then I started to think, well, why am I surprised? Lots of roles now that women used to be exclusively involved in, such as nursing. Lots of male nurses now, lots of male carers. And really, I think that there has been a marrying of the feminine and the masculine. And I agree with what some of your callers are saying, that there isn't that much difference, really, between the masculine and the feminine. So good luck with your show, and I'm enjoying listening to it. I listen to it weekly, and I really enjoy it.
So. Great. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Elizabeth. You've been talking to Ruth Copland on It's a Question of Balance. And if you keep it here, just after three, after the news, I'll be talking to my guest from the arts this week, Jane Lammercraft, who's an actress and comedy writer. You're listening on KSCO AM 1080 Santa Cruz. Welcome back to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland, and thanks very much to all the callers in the last hour. And if you're new to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland, just to let you know what we do on this show, Wednesdays 2 till 4, in the first hour we look at all kinds of topics from all kinds of angles, attempting to see if we have more in common than divides us, focusing on debate rather than one-sided conversations, trying to look at issues that have local relevance and global significance. And we keep a balance between the left and the right brain with the second hour featuring an in-depth interview with a guest from the arts. And I'm pleased to have in the studio with me this week British actress and comedy writer Jane Lammercraft. And having gained bachelor degrees in both English literature and law and a master's degree in text and performance studies, Jane went on to win the Dame Judi Dench scholarship to Mountview Theatre School in London, where she studied acting, appearing in a range of TV shows, film and theatre, including playing the Virgin Mary in the US production King of Kings. Jane found her true calling in comedy, both as a performer and writer. Represented by top London agent Giles Smart of United Agents, Jane writes comedy for both TV and radio. TV work for the BBC, ITV, Carlton and Channel 4 includes the highly popular shows Smack the Pony and Armstrong and Miller. In radio, Jane's work includes sketches for BBC Radio 4, BBC Radio 2 and BBC Radio 7 for a variety of shows, including The Jason Byrne Show, The Now Show and 2525, a sketch show set in the distant future, which is broadcasting presently on BBC Radio 4. Her current projects include writing for the latest series of The Now Show, writing for popular impressionist Rory Bremner, and a radio sitcom commission for BBC Radio 4. And Jane also performs her own work at comedy venues in Britain. Welcome to the show, Jane.
Hi, Ruth. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's very nice to have you here with me. And I'm just, you know, impressed by the number of degrees that you've got. You're obviously quite intellectual.
Well, yeah, I think if you want to encourage someone to be academic, maybe get their headmistress to tell them they're not university material.
Oh, is that what happened to you?
Yeah, kind of. I think I was probably trying to prove something, but I'm hoping eventually to get enough letters after my name to spell get a life. I'm trying to work out how to get that G.
Oh. Yes, I'm not sure about that. Yeah, maybe something in engineering or something, I don't know. So I was just interested, you started off, well, obviously you started off very academic in all those other areas, but once you got into acting, you started off in straight acting. How did you get drawn into the world of comedy?
Completely by chance, really. Somebody asked me to start writing with them, somebody who had already started doing comedy, and they just thought I was funny, and they said, would you like to do some writing with me? So I probably wouldn't have thought of it otherwise, yeah, to be honest.
But just kind of one of those life things that just comes along.
Yeah, one of those random life things. And I suppose it's kind of related to what I was doing. You know, I trained as an actress, so it was the same industry. And it kind of works, you know, quite nicely alongside acting because, you know, writing something you can do at home, you know, at your computer, and in your own time.
Yeah.
So if you've got other things going on, you can fit it in.
I'm always a bit in awe of people who write comedy, and I think perform comedy too, because it seems to me, I think it's harder to do comedy than it is to do drama. I mean, there's so few really, really good comedy films, and yet there's lots of dramas. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I suppose it's a specific skill. So if you're not good at comedy, then you're going to find it difficult to do it. And I suppose with comedy, you kind of need the sort of same elements that you need for a drama. If you're going to write a comedy film, it's got to have a plot and all the same elements that a drama has to have, plus it has to be funny. So
sort of
it's an extra
gift,
thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just think, you know, it's being funny is something that you either can do or you can't in a way, so...
Yeah. And is there a pressure on you if people know that you write comedy, they expect you to be funny when you're just interacting with them?
Yeah, I guess they probably do, instead of just being quite grumpy and
you don't give in to that. Don't give in to that, you know.
Well, I think the more time I spend writing comedy, the less kind of articulate and social I become.
Oh, really?
Yeah, less inclined to sort of joke around.
Right, because that because you're saving it up for your work, or just don't want to be like that when you're
not
doing your work?
No, I think it just fries your brain a bit.
Oh, yeah. I think it's hard. It's hard to be funny and think up funny things. I definitely I'm in awe of people who do that. And you do quite a lot of your work is on the radio, obviously a medium that I like because I'm on the radio. And, you know, I like it because I think, you know, you can have this sort of personal relationship more with the listener. It's more of a one-to-one thing almost because you've got one person at a time sort of listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering what appeals to you about radio as a medium for comedy rather than having a visual as well?
I think, you know, it you can do things on radio that you can't do on television. But, you know, maybe because the budget isn't big enough to set something in a helicopter, for instance.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if you're going to set something in a helicopter on the radio, you just need a sort of whirring noise or someone to mention that you're in a helicopter.
Right, oh, yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot more you can do in a way on the radio. But people often say that radio is not a visual medium. It actually is. You have to kind of paint images for the listener.
Yeah.
You have to see what's happening, and you have to create a visual image very much for radio.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't really thought about that, but that is true. And that's part of, I think, what is the appeal of radio, is that it's a bit like reading a book as well. It's engaging more of your imagination in the creative process than watching something, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you leave it up to the listener to use their imagination, then amazing things can happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of which, we got quite a few clips we're going to play during the show of your work of sketches that you've written. And the first one I've chosen to play, we're calling Billboards. I've just wondered if you could, this is from a show that's currently on the BBC Radio 4, 2525. Can you tell us a bit about the context of it?
Yes, it's as you said, it's set in 2525, so it's set in the future. And it's from the team that brought us Little Britain on the radio.
Oh, which is quite successful in America, Little Britain.
Yeah, so it's Matt Lucas's production company, and it's produced by Ashley Blaker, who produced Little Britain on the radio. So it's a great team. And this particular sketch is about how advertising might develop in the future.
Okay, well, we're going to play that now, and here we go. It's Jane Lamacraft's sketch, Billboards.
Advertising has seen constant evolution. In the 21st century, it was targeted ads. In the 2300s, facial recognition technology led to targeted billboards. Finally, in the 2500s, came the targeted talking billboard.
Well, I've had a lovely evening, Mike. Thanks for dinner.
As first dates go, that was really fun. I'm normally very shy. Alice,
Another rich dinner with another first date that goes nowhere? Why not try New Windies? New Windies is packed with antibacterial goodness that specifically targets that exact strand of bacteria causing your particular flatulence.
I bloody hate these stupid billboards. It's got me confused with someone else. I don't actually get it.
Don't worry, Mike. You know, we all get wins sometimes. It's only natural. Listen, it was fun. You know, but the evening doesn't have to end here. Why don't you come back to mine for coffee? I've got chocolate chip cookies.
Why do I try too hard to please men? Is now available as a download. From the author of Why Do They Always Leave Me, which you rated 4 stars on Amazon.
That was a friend using my account.
Listen, I'd love to come back to yours. I'll call a hover cab.
Oh, why did I have that curry? It's playing merry hell with my hemorrhoids. Sound like something you said this morning? That's because it was something you said this morning. Why not try soothing anal cool, putting the ah in ass?
I never said that.
Don't worry, we all have our little problems.
Why let embarrassing excess body hair spoil your fun? Stop incessantly Googling a solution and use Wax Away to remove even the toughest man-type hair at the bottom of your back.
I did Google hair removal once, but...
Alice, don't worry. It's all nonsense. Their databases get corrupted and...
Don't forget, new QRX condoms, now in super mini size. Now with extended shelf life, perfect for the very occasional user.
Now that's libelous. If anything, I'd need extra large. Well, extra medium.
Coffee.
Want to beat your restraining order? Want 100 loopholes that will help you avoid jail and still be close to the object of your alarmingly overwhelming affections? Then download Stalker Talk to your tablet reader now.
Actually, I've just remembered. Oh, I have have to be up early. Yeah, I feel like an early night.
Well, all right, I'll call you.
Yeah, okay, whatever, bye!
Oh, brilliant. Bloody billboard, thank you very much.
Going home on your own? Why not log in to www.aliennudes.co.mars?
Hang on, let me just get a pen and write that down.
Oh, dear. Well, that's very funny.
Thank you.
How on earth did you come up with that? I mean, it's, I bet you that's what it could be like in the future. I could just see that happening.
I mean, I just literally thought, what do we have today? And how would those things, could how could they have developed, yeah, and escalated and got more sophisticated and in the future.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty scary. They're already sort of linking this, our phones, like GPS, seeing where you are, and if you're walking past a certain shop, trying to target you by sending it to your phone. So,
yeah,
it isn't that unbelievable, really, is it?
Well, you know, you Google for something, and then you know you're then bombarded with adverts coming into your email, trying to sell you the thing that you were Googling about the day before, which is quite weird if you write comedy and you're using Google to research all sorts of weird things.
Yes, I can imagine. But it's just very interesting, you know, the unintended consequences of things, and that, you know, that sketch just shows that perfectly. You just can really imagine being on a date and that happening.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland, and my guest from the arts this hour, Jane Lammercraft, actress and comedy writer. We're going to go to a commercial break now, but I hope you'll join us afterwards for more interview and sketches. Keep it here on KSCO AM 1080 and KOMY AM 1340. Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. And my guest of this hour, my guest from the arts, is Jane Lammercraft, actress and comedy writer. And I was wondering, Jane, what was your first experience of comedy growing up? Can you remember?
My very first experience of comedy was, you know, that thing that your mum does when she puts her hand in front of her face and then removes them and suddenly there's a face there
and I know it's gone again.
That was hilarious. That was my first experience of comedy. And then more sophisticated things like tickling. And then possibly, you know, some of those now more classic sitcoms on television. And
yes, yeah.
So and my dad was very funny.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh.
So.
And of course, the British comedy, you know, it has had a large element of farce to it, always, hasn't it? Sort of traditionally. And I think that appeals to children a lot, you know, kind of bodily functions and all those kind of things. Yes. You know, it's always funny, isn't it, to children when you're growing up. And I was also thinking, you know, art generally is a means of communication, and I was wondering how you think comedy lends itself to communicating ideas and perspectives. Do you think that is something that's possible through comedy?
Yes, definitely. I think you can say things very concisely with comedy, and it can help hit certain points home. And I think laughter has the function of telling us, you know, what we should think about something. You know, so if we're all laughing at certain things, you can form a kind of consensus about what we all think about that thing.
Mm.
You know.
Interesting, yeah.
Does gay marriage cause flooding?
What?
Which was something that was suggested by a UKIP councillor.
Okay.
It's one of our political parties over here.
Yeah, that's very right-wing party.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, that was something that most of us found hilariously funny, that idea.
Okay, I have to ask, how could gay marriage possibly cause flooding?
What were they saying?
Divine retribution, I think.
Okay.
Either all that, right. Or, you know, gays have superpowers that,
that we're not aware of.
Yeah. In which case, you know, people should be a lot nicer to them.
But this is true. Maybe that's something everyone should bear in mind.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it helps kind of bat away ideas that we don't agree with.
Right.
And
that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that before. I'd like to play another clip of yours that you wrote, and the next one I've chosen is called Nominally Insensitive Detective. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this? What show was it on?
It was a BBC Radio 4 show called The Odd Half Hour.
Okay, so I'm going to play that now. This is Jane Lammercraft's Insensitive Detective.
Well, that was a lovely scone, Mrs. Taylor, wasn't it, Officer Jenkins?
Yes, Detective.
Oh, was it homemade?
Oh, yes, I can't stand shop-bought, and I make the jam myself too, Detective.
I suspect it is much jolly good for you, Mrs. Taylor.
Would you like another scone?
Oh, no, thank you very much. 3 scones, 2 Eccles cakes and a fondant fancy is plenty for me, Mrs. Taylor. You know what they say? A minute on the lips, fat thighs.
More tea then, Detective.
No, thank you, Mrs. Taylor. In fact, I must press on. Police work is never-ending. Come along then, Officer Jenkins.
Sorry, wasn't there something you wanted to discuss with me, Detective?
Yeah, Garth, you haven't told her about this.
Oh, God, of course. Oh, your husband's dead. Sorry, I was, sorry, I was building up to it. I was gently preparing you, and then it completely went out of my mind somewhere with the second scone. Idiot. Oh, sorry.
How?
Murdered. I expressly came here to tell you that as well. God.
But who?
Your brother killed him. They were gay lovers. He's confessed to the murder of your sister 10 years ago. She discovered them.
Oh,
I don't know. What am I like, hey? I'm having more and more of these senior moments. This is exactly like the other day. I went upstairs to get my glasses. I completely forgot what I was doing in there. Anyway, best be off. Thanks for the scones. Okay, everyone, listen up. As you know, the victim's body was found hanging from the roof of a deserted warehouse in the early hours of this morning. Suicide has been ruled out. This is now a full-scale murder investigation. The murder took place between 5 and 6 a.m. There must have been at least 2 moiderers because we know...
Sorry, Gov.
They murdered the victim.
Gov.
Yeah?
What's going on?
What do you think is going on? This is a murder investigation.
What's this saying, like, murder weird thing?
I'm just trying something.
Trying something?
Yeah. Anyway, so the victim...
What do you mean, trying something?
Okay, right, look, I'm trying to find my own trademark, you know, a thing. I thought it'd be a unique way of saying, you know, murdered, okay?
So, hang on. What do you mean?
I think it's the only way to get on in this business. All the cool cops have got their thing, you know, Kojak is lollipop, you know, Columbo's got the cigar, Ironside is on the wheels. So I thought that maybe saying murder in a different way would be my USP. What do you think of Murder Red? It's a bit Shakespearean, it's a bit old-fashioned, yeah? Yeah, I need something a bit more modern, don't I? Probably ahead of its time. I could invent a new word. There's been a malordination. It's a bit too ahead of its time. It's not ahead enough.
With all due respect, Gov, I think we just better get on with the murder investigation. It's not going to solve itself.
Yeah. Okay, so let's crack on with this murder!
Yeah, good luck with that.
Sit down, Mr. Jameson. It's bad news, I'm afraid. I'm very sorry to have to tell you that your wife has been murdered. I'm very sorry to have to tell you that your wife has been murdered.
Murdered?
Yes, murdered.
I don't understand.
No, I know it's a shock.
No, it's not a shock. I don't understand what you're saying.
No, your wife has been murdered. Viciously murdered. Murdered to death.
No, I don't.
Okay, murdered, if you prefer. I'm just sorry. I'm just trying something out.
I don't believe it.
Was it a bit insincere?
No, I don't believe it. My wife has been...
Murdered.
Yeah, and you're using it as an opportunity to experiment with inflection.
Oh, I shouldn't have said anything, should I? I should have just let it work its magic.
You're beautiful.
Oh, don't cry.
I promise you we will catch the men that did this, the moodering boosters.
Oh, that's very funny. And very well performed as well. I mean, I presume that's an important part of, you know, you write something and then it's going to stand or fall a lot on how well it's performed, isn't it?
Yeah, Dean McKeegan was brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I'm still laughing now. And I love the little music coming in. It's sort of almost like a kind of Agatha Christie type little music, and then she's just so inept.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that? I mean, I just can't remember now.
Good question. I don't know.
Are you walking around kind of all the time, sort of observing things and sort of thinking, that could be, you know, a good idea for a sketch or could be funny?
Well, I carry a notebook around with me, so if I think of anything funny, then I write it down immediately. Otherwise, if, you know, I don't, then I forget what it was, which is very annoying. I think things occur to you at any moment, really. They just kind of pop into your head in a really weird way, and sometimes not in a very convenient moment,
right?
Like when you're driving or something like that.
Yeah. Well, so a little personal recorder is a good idea, isn't it? Are you trying to convey anything with your writing, like through social commentary, or are you just trying to be funny? I mean, obviously it can be a vehicle for social commentary, comedy, but obviously it doesn't have to be.
Well, I'm doing it for the money, obviously.
There's so much money in the arts, isn't there?
So much money. Sometimes, you know, I'm just trying to be funny, but then I think you just have to be, you have to be careful what you're saying anyway, because you do tend to be saying something whether you intend to or not. So you kind of have to think about what I'm actually saying here.
Right. So you might think of something that's funny and then if it had a kind of message that you didn't really subscribe to, would that put you off using that piece?
Yes. Yeah. I think if I felt like I was offending anybody, who was, you know, I don't know, vulnerable or a minority or who, you know, anything like that, I'd think twice about doing it, even if I thought it was funny. But
right, so it's not comedy at any cost.
No, I don't really subscribe to that.
Right.
And obviously a lot of the stuff I do is topical satire, which you usually are sort of trying to say something about, you know, that political idea was a bit silly.
Right.
Or, you know, these people are criminal or whatever. You know, you're trying to make a point usually with that. But a lot of the stuff, right, is just very silly.
Right. And obviously comedy does pivot often around making fun of something, doesn't it, or some people. So there's just a line there that you would draw at some point of not wanting to offend certain people. I could see that. Well, you also perform your own work as well as write, and the next clip that we're going to play is called Bomb Disposal, and this is actually you performing the sketch. So maybe you can set this up a bit for us. Who is this bomb disposal expert, should we say, in inverted commas?
This is a longer sketch.
So we're only getting an excerpt of it, a small excerpt, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very annoying and totally incompetent and offensive bomb disposal officer who really shouldn't be in that job, who manages to cause an international incident.
by her ineptitude.
Later in the piece, yes, with some of the assumptions and attitudes that you kind of hear in this bit. So, all the views that she expresses about Americans, they are the characters and not mine, and definitely not mine. And they are supposed to be absurd, and the listener is meant to be laughing at those ideas.
And at her, presumably.
And at her for having them. And because I kind of wanted to satirise that attitude and assumptions that some people have
stereotypes.
Yeah. And,
yeah.
Yeah, because I don't understand it or recognise it myself.
No.
So, yeah, she gets herself into hot water as a result of it. Like, she's basically quite silly and stupid. So.
Should not be in the job that she's in.
Yeah.
Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland, and my guest from the arts today is Jane Lammercraft, and we're going to hear one of her sketches now that she's also performing called Bomb Disposal.
Would all passengers please leave the station concourse immediately?
Sorry, excuse me. Who would have left a bomb here?
Al-Qaeda.
No, sorry. Something different.
Irish problem?
What?
What they call the cause.
The cause are pretty bad, I suppose. Still, Westlife are more of a problem if you ask me.
I'm talking about the Troubles in Northern Ireland.
I don't know their music. Where is Northern Ireland again?
UK.
Yeah, I'm fine now. Just a bit shaky. I was just wondering where Ireland was.
It's in the UK. The United Kingdom?
That's part of America, isn't it?
Some people would certainly say it was.
Why would they want to bomb us?
Because the IRA...
IRA? But that's stupid. Why would the Inland Revenue do that? They'd kill lots of innocent taxpayers along with the tax evaders. Investigating suspected tax evaders before blowing them up would be more efficient.
What? Oh, great. Look, the press are here. Just what we need.
Cool.
So go and keep the press out of the way. Don't tell them anything. There'll be an official announcement when we know what's happening.
Cool.
Don't leave those poles lying on the floor. Someone will have an accident.
Yeah, I'll move them later. Okay, keep back. Keep back, please.
BBC, can I ask you a few questions?
Yeah, sure. Fire away.
Do you know who planted this bomb?
I shouldn't really say.
Go on.
Okay. We think it might be American. Certainly the wrapping is in very poor taste.
Why would the Americans do that?
Some kind of tax heist, apparently.
Sorry?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, why do Americans do anything? Why did they ban alcohol? Why did they ban guns? Why did they shoot John Lennon and let Yoko Ono live?
How are you dealing with the crisis?
Really quite well. Normally, I'd hide in the toilet suits all over, but I'm managing to maintain a safe distance between myself and the bomb.
No, I meant what action is being taken to deal with the bomb?
Oh, well, we need to establish whether it is actually a bomb, and then if it is, we need to refuse it.
Defuse it?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I get muddled between defuse and refuser, and sometimes refuse, which is American for no. They're really all too similar for words. They are words, so that's quite literally true. Now, as I was saying, if it is a bomb, then we will have to defuse it. If it's not a bomb, defusion may be unnecessary. In which case, we'll probably just blow it up.
Maybe you could explain to the viewers how the bomb works.
Sure. The threat of an explosion scares people into complying with the wishes of the bomber. It's really quite effective.
I meant, how do they work internally?
You're not meant to take them internally.
No. How do they work mechanically?
Oh, I see. Well, a modern explosive is triggered by shockwaves from a detonator. This causes the plastic explosive to expand really quickly, faster than the human eye can keep up with. Well, unless the human eye was involved in the explosion, then it will fly through the air at exactly the same speed as the explosive material.
You were saying about how bombs work.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, the older style bombs tended to be dynamite in all sense of the word. They were great, made of dynamite, and that's all the meanings. They were often detonated by an outside force, such as a plunger-type thing. This particular bomb seems to be a modern one, which is in keeping with the American way of life. They don't go in much for tradition, do they? It seems likely, therefore, that this is American. I don't want to panic anyone, but I do think I'm right in saying that it is highly probable that the Americans do, in fact, have nuclear know-how these days.
So what are the chances of seeing some pyrotechnics here today?
Virtually nil. Dinosaurs have been extinct for quite some time, and now you really must excuse me. I've got bombs to defuse. Excuse me. Toilets.
Well, that was a sketch called Bomb Disposal by my guest of this hour, Jane Lammercraft. featuring an extremely inept and unworldly and somewhat offensive bomb disposal expert. We're going to go to a commercial break now, but I hope you'll join us after that. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance on KSCO AM 1080 and KOMY AM 1340. Welcome back to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland and my guest from the arts this hour, Jane Lammercraft, actress and comedy writer. And we were just listening to a sketch that Jane wrote about a bomb disposal expert. And I was just thinking, listening to that, in that one there was no canned laughter. The other sketches we've heard, there was canned laughter. And I know there was...
say it's not canned laughter, it's it was they were recorded in front of a live audience.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure that. Anyone uses canned laughter anymore.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
No, most things where you hear a laughter track, it's been recorded in front of an audience.
Right, well, I know kind of at least a few years back it was very common, wasn't it, to have the sort of like ha, you know, kind of would just come in to sort of almost tell people when to laugh. And then I know there were some shows actually on in America that just had no laughter track at all, and that was quite revolutionary at the time.
Yeah, I mean, probably the shows that had the laughter track were filmed in front of an audience, and it's real laughter and they're really laughing at the thing that they're
right
they're seeing. But yeah, I think it does, it can help people. I think when you hear other people laughing, it does have an effect on your yeah. perception of something.
Yeah, well, it's like that thing they say, the quickest way to make someone laugh is to laugh yourself. Just yeah. keep laughing, you know, rather than tell a joke or something, and it just makes other people laugh.
Yeah, I may resort to that later in this interview.
Maybe you're already
you're doing it.
Yes, she's doing it already, and I've fallen into the trap. Oh my God. And so Stephen Fry has spoken about the differences between US and British comedy, and he seems to feel there's quite a big difference. And Ricky Gervais of The Office fame, less so. He said, if there is a difference, I'm guessing the American version is smarter, better teeth, more ambitious. They both agree, however, that American comedy has more optimism than British. Do you agree with that? What do you think that's about, and what are the differences?
I think that is a difference that our comedy does tend to be more about, you know, kind of losers and failures and people who can't get their act together in one way or another. Whereas I think American sitcoms, that, you know, that the kind of hero of them tends to be more positive and more,
it's more hope.
And perhaps
that's part of the kind of American dream, you know, the idea that you can, things can get better, you know, you work hard and things will change. And
yeah, very possibly, whereas we just kind of think everything's going to stay as it is.
Yeah. I think Ricky Gervais said, you know, that Americans grew up, you know, being told that they can be the president of America if they want. And he said that nobody's really told that in England, like, you can be the prime minister, you know. It's sort of this,
well, I don't know, maybe if you go to Eton, probably.
Yes, maybe certain people being told they can be the prime minister. We're going to play another sketch now that Jane has written, and this is another sketch from the show that's on BBC Radio 4 at the moment, 25 25. Can you just tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, this is set in a schoolroom in the future.
Okay, all right, we're going to hear this now.
One thing doesn't change, and that is kids still hate going to school. All right, class, settle down. Please take out your text tablets and open the old English folder.
Sir, not old English. Why do we have to study a boring, dead language?
Because some of the greatest poets and writers of all time were from the 21st century and used Old English. Sir Eminem, O.B., Lord Dizzy Rascal, the surreal novelist Dan Brown. Some of his sentences still have scholars desperately trying to figure out what he was trying to say. May I remind you that some of you are even named after great artists of the 21st century. For instance, you two, Snoop Doggy Dogg and Deppy.
Yes, sir.
And you, Pam Ayres.
Yes, sir.
But our language now is, like, literally well better than back then, sir.
Now, now, that's enough complaining. Take out your text tablets at once. Drogba, you haven't covered your text tablet in brown paper. Please do so.
Yes, sir.
Right now, where do we get to? Ah, yes, what a literary masterpiece. Gangster's Paradise by Coolio. You start, please, Armstrong.
Been spending most their lives living in the gangster's paradise.
Yes, it's been spending, not been spending. The G is always silent, and it and it's gangster.
I'm a locked out gangster set trippin'.
Trippin'?
Trippin'. I'm a locked out gangster set trippin' banger. And my homies is down, so don't arouse my anger, fool.
Yes, you haven't quite got the tone, have you, Armstrong? But let's try this next one. Nothing But a G-Thang by Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg. Read together.
It's like this and like that and like this and it's like that and like this and like that and it's like this and like that and like this and so just chill till the next episode.
Oh, it's so moving, don't you think?
Sir, what does this mean, sir? Pimping hoes and clocking a grip.
Yeah, that's the mystery of poetry. No one really knows for sure. I know a lot of you used Westwood Notes, and it says there it's something to do with gardening. But we really can't be sure. Carry on, Sneezeby.
I'm a bad boy with a...
Wid! Wid! Not win, Sneezeby. That's basic poetry.
Old English poets are so lame, sir. I mean, who is this mofo they keep talking about?
Look, I don't know. Some things maybe we're not meant to know. Carry on, everyone.
I'm stacking and macking and packing a ten. So when you're slipping, I slip the clipping. But ain't no set tripping.
Well, I can't say I'm overly impressed, and I'm going to have to write to your parents and tell them that your grasp of the gangster rappers is really not what it should be. Anyway, let's try something a little more advanced. Everyone open your Dr. Seuss at I do not like them in a house, I do not like them with a mouse. Zoos are still...
Well, talking about... social commentary. There's a bit of social commentary going on there, isn't there? Where is our education system going in
well,
the future?
Yeah. I just kind of like the idea that in the future we'll be they'll be trying to get us to do things that, you know, we didn't want to do today, like possibly you must have your shirt outside of your trousers, and your trousers must be halfway down your bottom.
And tucked in, and you're looking proper and everything.
Things
sort of
change.
A juxtaposition. I wanted to talk to you because Tina Fey has commented on the difficulty women have in comedy, both through her comedy writing, including in 30 Rock, and also in her autobiography. And at least she seems to feel that there's a feeling out there that women can't be funny for some reason, or at least that men are funnier. Are you aware of women in comedy being treated differently in the UK? Is that a can of worms? I've like nearly opened there, or do you think?
Well, there's certainly less women in comedy than men. So I guess there's a number of reasons for that.
Do you think people think women can't be funny?
I don't know. I mean, I have heard that attitude.
It's not something
I've heard that attitude
really,
expressed. Yeah. Obviously, I think that is rubbish, and it's kind of the whole debate about it is kind of, you know, almost just kind of why are we talking about this still? You know,
yeah.
What century are we in?
And do you think there's an attitude that women, people think that what women think is funny is only going to be funny to women?
In the general public?
Yes, or, I don't know, just have you come across any of this, or maybe it's more of an American thing, I don't know.
No, I mean, yes, I've come across all these views, and I just think, you know, if you don't think women can be funny, then that just must come from a prejudice.
Right,
because why on earth would that be true?
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely doesn't make any sense. But I do think in comedy, there's an element of expectation. You know, if you, like you said, if you're laughing, someone else will laugh. If you're expecting something to be funny, I think you're more likely to find it funny than if you're not. If you've decided that the woman that you're looking at is not going to be funny because she's a woman, then the chances of you finding her funny less.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, definitely makes sense. Well, we're coming towards the end of the show. The last clip we're going to play of Jane's is another one that you are actually performing in as well. It's about dog walkers. Do you want to... We're just playing a very short excerpt, so can you kind of set the scene for us a little bit?
Yeah, this is an idea that I'm developing with Radio 4 at the moment. And
BBC Radio 4.
Radio 4. And it's about two shy dog walkers who aren't able to communicate their sort of romantic feelings directly, and so do it all through kind of symbolic talk about their dogs, Ben and Sally.
All right, here we go.
It really is lovely sat up here looking out over the whole county.
Yes, it really is.
What a lovely nature your Sally's got. It's great she and my Ben get on so well.
Well, when someone's as considerate and caring as Ben is, for an Alsatian, I mean.
She's got such shiny hair, your Sally. Such beautiful, long, shiny hair.
Thank you, Sir Sally. He's so capable.
Such a sweet expression. And a lovely, healthy, cold, wet...
Nose.
Yes, nose.
Yes, no, I mean, well, I know just how much Sally looks forward to seeing Ben for her daily walk.
Well, these walks with Sally really have come to mean a lot to Ben, too. He really can't think much else, to be honest, when he's not thinking about chasing other squirrels, that is.
Does he chase after many squirrels, Ben?
What? Yes.
Oh.
Only very special ones. One special one, in fact.
Really? Well, I hope he doesn't want to tear it limb from limb and have its heart for breakfast.
Good God, no. I think he'd rather just lick it all over.
Oh.
I mean, take it out for dinner. I mean, share his nuts with it. shall we walk?
Oh dear, that's funny. And by the sound of the audience, that was in a live venue, was it? Yeah.
Yes, that was at an event called Pulp Diction, which was part of the Godalming Theatre Festival.
Ah, it must be great to actually see the people in front of you laughing at something you've written.
It's a great relief. Yes.
Oh, yes, I can imagine. Well, we're coming to the end of the show now. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland. My guest that I've been talking to is actress and comedy writer Jane Lammercraft. I want to thank you very much for coming in today and sharing your work with us. It's
Thank you.
Fascinating, you know, hearing all the different clips, and I'm sure the listeners have been enjoying them, at least I hope they have. And if you want to find out more about Jane, you can Google her and lots of different things come up, excerpts and links to various websites and things like that. So if you want to hear any more of her work or find out about her, you can Google Jane Lammacraft, Lamacraft. Well, that's all from me for this week. I look forward to being with you again next week, Wednesday, 2 till 4. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland on KSCO AM 1080 Santa Cruz and KOMY AM 1340 Watsonville.